two corridors. So if you go way back into the summer, or actually last spring when we were had a discussion originally around the Tier 1 corridors, we asked jurisdictions if they wanted to do have other projects considered for a Tier 2 corridor discussion to do work over the summer on it and come back and we would have a discussion now about it, and that's exactly where we are. So local jurisdictions have proposed four different potential investments in these Tier 2 corridors, and you have the proposal and summary facts in your packets. These were also sent to the task force and posted online last week. Tonight is the night that we have for learning about these different proposals. It's a night for you to learn about them, to ask questions that you have around them, so that we can provide an informed decision or reformed comments to the Metro Council next month. So we will be sending forward some comments and some input to Metro Council next month. So this is the first part of the discussion. These Tier 2 proposals are not meant to replace any of the Tier 1 investments we recommended to Metro in December. So those are very solid decisions that have been made. They're also not going to replace any of the region-wide any of the funding for the region-wide programs that we've been discussing either. These are really meant to help our measure do more in more places to advance the values that we've been discussing and holding throughout this entire process. So we're not, the council isn't asking us to trim any of our other recommendations or priorities in order to recommend any of the Tier 2 proposals. So just keep that in mind as we're discussing them. It's really about adding to the existing package, not taking away anything. Before we delve into the public comment, I did want to introduce two new task force members. Two of our members had to leave the task force due to changing personal and employment circumstances. So Metro Council appointed two wonderful, knowledgeable people in their place. So we have Coblenz, thank you, sorry about that, who is a resident of Gladstone and who's a member of Metro's Committee on Racial Equity and was also, you might recognize, she was part of the LIT for Clackamas County this summer. And then we have Richa. She's the Advocacy Director at the Street Trust and has been following this process very closely as a key leader in the Getting There Together Coalition. We're really excited to have both of you guys jumping into this process, especially that it's been late, but I think we're really lucky to have two people who have been paying attention and involved in this process taking the seats, so I think Metro Council did a great job in bringing you on board. So thank you. And now I'm going to pass it over to Allison, who's going to talk about housekeeping and then getting the public comment started.
Okay, so you might have noticed that we're a little light on microphones tonight. A reminder, your microphone is on when the red light is on, and get as close as possible. I think we're a little louder now, but don't be shy with that microphone. And folks in the back, you're going to let us know if you can't hear. Do that kind of universal symbol for I can't hear. Can you hear me okay? Perfect. Thank you. We're doing so well already. Reminders that your restrooms are down the hall and to your left. There is a fire extinguisher behind Hannah and Kyle. And if there is the unlikely event, an emergency, we'll meet in the plaza. We'll go down the stairs and meet in the plaza behind us. So with that, we will kick it off with public comment. We have two requests for public comment this evening. You'll get a minute and 45 seconds each, and I will give you a gentle reminder when your time is up. So we will kick our public comment off with Frank this evening. Frank, will you come join us?
All right. Good evening. I'm Frank Bumick, the mayor of Tualatin. On behalf of the mayors of Tualatin, Tigard, Sherwood, King City, and Durham, I ask that the Highway 99W planning project, Highway 217 construction project, and Sunset Corridor plan projects be selected for capital investment. Highway 99W acts as a main arterial for local and regional traffic comprised of both commuters and recreation travelers, and it is not suited for today's traffic congestion and multimodal needs. It is in dire need of safety improvements and will be a major route to and from the future Bridgeport Transit Center. Highway 217 is critical for north-south mobility for southeast Washington County residents. Safety issues and congestion bottlenecks need to be corrected, while travel time improvements are needed for freight movement and emergency vehicles to St. Vincent's Hospital. The Sunset Corridor Study will identify existing deficiencies, evaluate potential transportation system improvements, and weigh the viability of potential projects to address the 18-hour-a-day congestion on this corridor. Thank you for consideration of these projects this evening. Have a good night.
And next up, Doug.
Good evening. My name is Doug Allen. I know your main topic's the Tier 2 corridors, but I want to offer you something to think about between now and when the discussion gets back to the programs and revenue. We need to increase transit share of trips in this region from the current low single-digit level. You've heard from TriMet that they're unprepared to meet the need with additional service. And even if the corridor projects are wildly popular, we still need additional service if we want to carry more riders. This region is underinvested in transit service, going back to about 2005, when bus service was cut by 5% in response to the dot-com bust. During the decade prior to 2005, service had been growing at around 5% per year, and ridership grew by about an equal amount, or greater. By 2009, service had been restored, and ridership was up even more. Then the Great Recession struck, and bus service was cut by 12% by 2011, and ridership took a similar nosedive. Let's go back to what we thought we were going to do in the 2004 RTP. Back in 2004, TriMet system served approximately 228,000 daily originating riders. By 2020, that RTP called for the number to increase to more to 552,000 average weekday originating riders on bus and rail. However, in fiscal year 2019, TriMet carried only 237,500 average weekday originating rides, less than half of what the preferred system was supposed to carry when we had the 2004 RTP. It's not just the bus system that's been neglected. The whole system has been neglected. And the Metro 2018 RTP estimates that we need to have big increases in service, and we're not doing it. So I want you to think about that between now and when the topic comes up again.
Thank you, Doug.
All right, and with that, we will close our public comment period. Chairs, back over to you.
All right, thank you.
Well,
welcome, Pam.
Thank you, and I apologize for being late. It goes without saying that I was stuck in traffic. So, once again, I do apologize. So thank you to those of you who provided testimony this evening. That's, as I say on a regular basis, that's a really integral part of what it is that we're doing here. So thank you. I appreciate it. We all appreciate it. At this time, we are going to be getting to the Tier 2 corridor presentations in just a minute. But first, there are a couple of staff updates to share, and Andy and Margie are going to be sharing some information with us.
So the first update I have, I'm going to put someone on the spot, but I just want to say that Tyler Frisbee is back with us on staff after having had a maternity leave.
Excuse me. Who's with Tyler?
Her husband. Oh, the baby.
Yeah, the baby.
Oh, the baby. Star of the show. This is Fitzgerald, and I was told I was going to get to hold the baby while I began an update, but that's okay. It's okay. No. You would be too distracted.
No one would listen.
Yeah. So the other update I have is we've been a little busy at Metro since our last task force, and a number of us have been pulled into a number of us have been pulled into double duty as the Metro Council decided to take on the task of looking at referring a homeless services measure to the May ballot while we continue to work on the transportation initiative. So. We have, at our council president's admonition, we have not been sleeping. We have been crafting language. We have been getting out in the community with three forums across the region, a public hearing, two work sessions just in the past couple weeks. And we are looking at We are looking at scheduling potential action on a measure for next Tuesday, so staff will likely be working all through the weekend to try to make that happen in partnership with our local partners and a coalition of folks. I am happy to answer any questions after this session if people want more information on that, but we didn't want to take up time here. I just wanted to note that that is going on at the same time. Many folks around this table have talked about how fast we're moving in this process. The Transportation Task Force feels luxurious compared to the time frame that we're on a supportive housing and homelessness measure. So that's all I have.
I'm going to bring us back to transportation and kind of tee up the Tier 2 proposals. As Commissioner Vega-Peterson noted, we've asked local jurisdictions to give presentations on the four proposals. And I do want to kind of answer the question of, wasn't there five proposals in the beginning? You may have noted that Oglo Bridge was pulled as a Tier 2 proposal. This was more about its feasibility at this time. While building the bridge is still technically feasible, there was a vote in Lake Oswego that made it very difficult to do this project at the time, or at least at this time, and considering it, moving it forward as a standalone project. What Clackamas County and Metro have jointly been working on is how to move forward a crossing across the Willamette River. We're working on kind of scenario plans and scenario processes to look at different options along the river and teeing that up for a potential application to a program at a later date. So with that, I'm going to just leave that there, and then we'll go ahead and move into the Tier 2 presentations.
Thank you, Margie. I appreciate it. Sorry, I'm still getting organized here. So we do need to move on to the Tier 2 proposals that the jurisdictions are bringing forward for consideration. As you recall, the Metro Council designated 17 Tier 2 corridors last June. The Council, with our input, recognized that these are important corridors to the region and could help advance our values, but with fewer or less defined potential investments than the 13 Tier 1 corridors. So we need to be clear. These corridors haven't had the same extensive process as the 13 Tier 1 corridors. The Tier 1 corridors had deep local investment team engagement and Metro and partner staff analysts and development before the staff and task force project recommendations were completed last fall. You'll remember how great that process was with our near total consensus at our December meeting. But it's important to note that we just do not have that level of analysis on these Tier 2. So for the Tier 2 corridors, the Council directed that investments could be considered for the measure if local jurisdictions make a proposal showing how investments could support key outcomes identified by us and the Metro Council. We've received four proposals. Two are for potential construction. Two are for corridor planning. So with that, JVP?
Yes. So it's really our job to consider how well these four proposals align with the values and the key outcomes that we've been talking about through this whole process, and then to tell Council what we think about including these, potentially including them in the measure with the rest of the Tier 1 and region-wide program investments that we're going to have. So tonight what we're going to hear, each of the jurisdictions that are bringing these proposals forward will give a brief presentation about these, but then there'll be time for all of us to ask some questions of them about the proposals. We do realize that some of you might be hearing about these proposals for the first time. For others, they might be more familiar. Some of the people on this task force have come from the actual, jurisdictions that are recommending these proposals for consideration. So we just want to recognize that fact. It might take some time to absorb some of the information to get, in your mind the concepts about what's going to be included and really to think about how they do align with our values and outcomes that we've been talking about. But that's why tonight isn't our only chance to be talking about these Tier 2 corridor projects. In addition to the verbal questions that we'll have tonight, You're welcome to submit some written questions that we can send to the jurisdictions for further, further clarification. And we were going to ask the jurisdiction to respond to those questions before the next task force meeting. The jurisdictions are very eager to provide any information that we want because they want us to really have a full understanding and consideration of these proposals being included. And then the council is really going to want to hear our thoughts about including these at our March 18th meeting, so to really inform their decision-making on whether to include them in the measure. So before we begin, are there any questions that anyone has for staff about the Tier 2 concepts generally or how these proposals came forward? Okay. All right. And then, Allison, if you want to go ahead then and explain the process for this part of the meeting with the presentations and the questions.
Sure. So we are slightly ahead of schedule, but I don't want us to have a false sense of security because time is almost always our enemy in these meetings because there's lots to cover. So we have a lot of friends from jurisdictions here today. Hi, welcome. Glad that you're here. We're going to invite you to come up and sit next to me. It might get a little cozy, but that's okay. And I will be timing your presentations. Again, we have a little bit of extra time, but we do want to focus a lot of this on giving task force members an opportunity to ask questions and have some open discussion with you. So I'll be giving you gentle reminders when it's time to wrap it up. Task force members, we also recognize that, as Jessica mentioned, this could be the first time that you're hearing about something, and we all process in different ways. So you have post-it notes placed kind of regularly around the table. If you have a question that you want to you're sitting with, but we don't get an opportunity to answer it, please write it down on a post-it note. We have those papers behind you. You can stick them up on those papers to the corresponding corridor or give them to myself and staff. And jurisdictions have committed to getting you a response in writing very soon, before our next task force meeting. So you also have the opportunity to write in or email questions to staff, and they will make sure that those get passed along to the corresponding jurisdictions. I may be asking periodic temperature check questions. Sometimes we see a lot of nodding heads, but for the benefit of everybody in the room, also folks in the public, asking, hey, how many people agree with that or have that same question? As always, I will also be giving priority to people who have not spoken. So if you've spoken a couple times and I'm not calling on you, I might just be offering some space for people who have not had an opportunity to speak yet. Sound good? Okay, so we are going to start things off. Yes?
We were just saying that we have plenty of space over here. Folks want to come down here.
Oh, cool. They don't want to sit next to me? Yeah, we might have a little bit more space.
We always want to sit next to you.
Thank you, Pam. That's very sweet. I guess, folks, wherever you feel comfortable, on this side or the other side. So we are going to start things off with looking at Highway 43 corridor. So I believe that we have a representative from West Lynn with us this evening.
I do. And so here's the partnership. On one side, you have Washington County. We're going to turn that over. Do I have to turn this on? Yeah, okay. So welcome, everyone. I am John Williams. I'm the interim city manager for the city of West Lynn here on behalf of this project, which has a long history in our area and in Clackamas County generally. One thing I want to say, I worked here at Metro for 9 years, staffed many task forces in this room, and I really appreciate the time and energy that you have put into this work. It's really good work. It's really important. All of these projects are important, and we just want to thank you for your work and your attention to our project here tonight. So you heard the overview from, there we go. Okay. So what we are requesting is inclusion of the Highway 43 corridor in as a Tier 2 project. This is a highway that has been underinvested for many years. It's an ODOT-owned facility. I think you will see that it is not parallel to any other routes that you have discussed on this committee or are considering investing in. It's really a corridor that provides through movements for a large percentage of folks in Clackamas County into West Lynn, into Lake Oswego, and forward into the city of Portland. Unfortunately, so 21,000 vehicles a day, but unfortunately, it has not been invested in. It has really significant safety shortfalls, especially for multimodal. person's trips. And that's one of the key messages. I'm going to leave you with four key things to remember about this project. One is, this is a project focused on multimodal and on safety. This is not a project to speed cars through West Lynn. It doesn't expand the capacity for vehicles. It's focused on bike paths, separated bike paths, sidewalks, and safety for folks, access for bikes, pedestrians, and transit users. So you have sidewalks very spotty, many places not existing at all. There's really no way to cross. And in the evenings, in the mornings, when the traffic backs up, you see people scampering across through traffic in order to get to the bus. We do have a significant number of folks living along this corridor who have experienced poverty. We have a lot of old folks that need new transit connections. It's very difficult to access those services or even to walk to meet your daily needs. Left turn bays are not existing, so you have a problem with through movements. And the transit system is really just not functional. And our council is very, very focused on fixing these issues. That's why the city of West Lynn, the voters of West Lynn, invested money in the design funds for this project in cooperation with ODOT. Our city engineer, Lance Calvert, just walked in. He's been working with ODOT on this. And what I want you to know, second thing about this project, we think this will be one of the first projects built if you provide funds, if the citizens of this region provide funds. We are doing the initial design work. We have an initial phase that has been a regional flexible funds project. Lance has been doing design work with ODOT. You'll see our cost estimates are solid. We know exactly what has to be done. We think this will be one of the first projects out of the gate. And this is an example cross-section of what you get with this project. Separated bike paths, pull-out transit facilities, improved safety for pedestrians and cyclists, allowing folks to move inside West Lynn but also through the city to get where they need to go. The funding guidelines for this project, aligning with the outcomes that have been discussed by this committee and the Metro Council, you'll see this. I'm not going to go through all of them. We think we have a really good story that explains how we meet the desired outcomes. Again, I want to make sure that you know this is a multimodal project and a safety project, and it provides access for folks that use those modes. I have been told that I'm going to get music playing after 5 or 6 minutes, so I'm going to try to get through this, then we're happy to answer your questions. We have, as I mentioned, we have a really good understanding of what this project will cost, and that's because we've been doing the design engineering. We're ready to go on a short section of project that was previously funded through the regional process. And so we think we have as good or better cost estimates than you've seen on other projects because we are right there and ready to go. We know what this project will cost. And this gets you, this number gets you a fully improved road all the way through connecting Lake Oswego to Oregon City. So, oh no, you can't have that one yet. That's not mine. Basically, with the time available, I just want to make sure you know four things about this project. I mentioned two of them. Multimodal and safety project. I know that's the third time I said it. I'm going to stop. This project has broad support across Clackamas County. You've seen letters from a variety of jurisdictions and groups in Clackamas County. They're not all in your packet today. We'd be happy to get them for you. Because this project really is about getting folks from other parts of Clackamas County through our city, as well as serving our own city. This leverages previous investments. That's number three. And number four is that it's ready to go. It's buildable. And we are happy to answer questions tonight. We recognize you have limited time. Happy to take your written questions and get your answers back. So, again, thank you. And I don't know if it's questions now or... Okay. And Lance or Jamie may join us there. So any questions for us right now?
Vivian, why don't you kick us off?
I just turned it off. Thank you. I appreciate the presentation. Can you speak a little bit more to some of the major risks of the project? The two areas I'm particularly interested in is how the particular cycle track design would be new for ODOT in this region. What's that relationship been like, and the likelihood of being able to move forward on this design concept as you all have, and also speak a little bit to the environmental factors it's an interesting terrain, right? And like how, just tell me a little bit more about the environmental considerations of the build-out as you all have designed it so far.
Thank you for that question. It's a great question. We are proud of our design for this project, and I do think having it be new, I understand why it was described a little bit as risk, and that makes sense. But we have been engaged with ODOT working through this design. We're optimistic that this can be a design leader for the region. We think we have a good partnership with the folks at ODOT. We have worked through what this cycle path can provide and how it'll get built, and we've laid it out over the terrain. So we feel like it's relatively low risk. Lance, do you have anything else to add? So Lance Calvert, our Public Works Director and City Engineer, who's been working directly with ODOT.
Just real quickly, if you've at all familiar with ODOT's latest design work on the Blueprint for Urban Design, this project is actually featured in that Blueprint design manual. So there's a lot of interaction back and forth with ODOT on the design. I think this is actually a blueprint for how these facilities should be built, not only in the Portland metro area, but in the entire country. I think we're leading that charge. We've built these previously in West Lynn, and we're currently building them in our Main Street corridor right now. I'd also speak to the fact that, you know, we do have a longstanding relationship with ODOT. We've signed IGAs with ODOT on this corridor that we can continue to duplicate through this project. So I think we can move quite expeditiously on this project and move forward with it. I think it gets really challenging with ODOT when it's federal aid funds because of the differences in design. It's not in their design manual. So I think actually this is a great project for the T2020 funding mechanism because it gives us a little bit more flexibility in how we go about design and can push this project forward much quicker and much more reasonably priced. I would say that, you know, we land on this cost estimate page. This estimate is really focused on delivering a federal aid project. There's 40% contingency in this cost estimate. There's a lot of extras that I would say is in this cost estimate. I think we could actually deliver this project much, much cheaper than what's shown here. But we also want to be very conservative in our cost estimate and not provide any false expectations as we move through the project. I hope that answers your questions.
Okay, maybe a question and then and I make a comment and then maybe I'll ask another question at the end. What's the length of the project proposal?
A little over 2 miles, probably about 2.5 miles long.
Yeah, so I'm privileged. I ride a road bike a lot. I ride in every county. I ride in Clackamas County. I ride in Washington County. I love Washington County. I ride in Multnomah County. I actually ride this stretch a fair amount, and it's probably one of the worst stretches of roadway we have in the entire region. But I still ride it because it's an important connection to lots of other great riding on both sides of the river. And in fact, last summer, the policymakers' ride, which a number of us were on, including Mayor Gamba, Councillor Stacy, and Lewis, we rode along there. So I think there's a lot of people that got a perspective on how bad it is, but how big an opportunity is. And part of the opportunity, I think, is important to understand is if you were heading southbound, you go over the Oregon City Bridge, now you can connect around to the trolley trail with just a little bit of work, which is a major investment and an amazing piece of infrastructure that happened in collaboration with a number of probably folks around this table. But on the north end, as I understand it, this would come near, if not intersect, with Old River Road. So for people that do ride bikes recreationally or even for transportation, one would connect to Old River Road. The real opportunity, of course, is going back over the river, which is, you know, the Oglo crossing that is off the table now. But I think it's critical that thing stay, that Oglo remains, you know, in scope in some way along with this investment, because now you have a real opportunity to connect investments that have been made on both sides of the river and really give people an opportunity to safely travel by bike or walking along these pretty densely populated areas.
Thank you for that. Normally, we don't like people saying we have one of the worst connections in the region, but in this room tonight, I'm willing to accept it. We completely agree.
You want me to tell you where each pothole is?
There's an 800 number for that. But thank you. There's been a tremendous amount of discussion in the broader Clackamas County area about how you build out the system. Chair Bernard, many of the others around the table, Mayor Gamba, Mayor Knapp, have talked about building the system out. We don't have a grid, so we have to take advantage of the opportunities we have, and we do think there's a huge potential here to really connect up this quadrant of the region, and we just need to strengthen those backbones to do it. Thank you.
Is this on? Okay. Thanks for your presentation, and I'm going to ask the same question to all the groups, so I won't ask it. I'll just ask it once, but it would be really helpful. Some of the material did touch on this for some of the projects, but one of the key values and outcomes that the task force articulated in our first couple of meetings was around leveraging regional and local investments. We talked a lot about funding at the state level that had come in through the transportation package, federal funding, and trying to particularly, I think, hit projects that weren't being covered by some of those investments. But if you could, either tonight or later in writing, talk a little bit about what funding could this potentially leverage or does it leverage, and then maybe on the flip is, if you don't get the full amount, what sort of, is there a phasing opportunity, or is there money at risk if it's not funded now? It's sort of the urgency of the timing of the funding.
Thank you for that. We'd be happy to answer that in writing. We'll answer all of these in writing as well. We think this does leverage money. We think we have a great local match that we'll document. But the voters passed a general obligation bond in 2018 that provided about $13 million towards transportation project, which is funding the design work in this case, and funding projects all over Westland. So we've put our money where our mouth is on this project as well. Additionally, it leverages the regional flexible funds allocation that was made in the past for a section of the roadway. And that rough-up funding has allowed us to get where we are on understanding the design and the costs. So in a way, it's really set us up to be able to deliver the project. So we can document both of those things. In terms of phasing, I think ideally this project would stretch end-to-end so that people can get through the community on a longer section. The phasing opportunity, I believe, I'll look at Lance, is you do part of it lengthwise, and then you do the rest another time. I think you can save a lot of money really in the long run by doing it all at once, so that's and really achieve the project goals ideally. But I know a lot of your other projects are going to say the same thing. You need to fully build out a road in order to make it functional. Any more thoughts on that, Lance?
Do you think maybe you could have a couple more questions?
Happy to.
Tim, Dave, Mark, and then I think we'll move on to the next corridor.
Thank you. A couple of issues. I am not experienced at bicycling this corridor, but I know that as a vehicle driver in the winter and in the dark, it can be terrifying because of the people that are darting across the road to get to commercial areas or, the schools, in some places there, and the high school kids are fairly cavalier about safety sometimes. So I think that's an important consideration to include. The other piece that I wondered if you could address is the question of historically marginalized communities economically, and what role or function would this stretch work to connect that have not had much consideration in the past, and I'm really thinking all the way down to the South End. But tell me what you perceive about that.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor Knapp, for that. We do have a
a poverty rate in this corridor that I think would surprise some folks, between 10 and 25% in some locations, but also connects to broader working populations commuting through this area. So we want to improve safety for those folks, too, folks coming in from other parts of Clackamas County using the transit in this corridor to get to jobs. We'd be happy to document all of that in the response back underwriting. But we understand that's an important part of this committee's outlook.
Thank you.
Dave?
Okay, I think I have the problem, Mike, so I'm going to try to be careful here.
I'm really close to it, Dave.
Okay, that'll work. Well, she can touch us. Okay, thanks, Meredith. So I think my questions were similar to Catherine's, and so it would be great, John, as you guys sort of put together maybe, I don't know if it's a revision to the estimate or what are the partnership opportunities there? And then if there is a new estimate and you guys think you can deliver it for less and be confident about it, that would be nice to know, just because I think as this measure starts to get bigger and bigger, I think we need to be really able to, all of us collectively, hold our heads up with voters and say, and in the council, and say, hey, we've got as good a handle as we can on what we think the real cost will be. So that will be super helpful in the written reply. The second thing I just was maybe more a question for Metro staff, and that is the contingency, the 40% contingency, is that a standard number for all the estimates that we've already voted on in Tier 1 and may vote on in Tier 2? Is that just sort of, I mean, we do construction projects at my company, so I get the contingency need. I'm just wondering if that's built in there already.
It depends. If you remember back to the projects, there was ranges. Ranges went as high as 40%. I would say 40% is on the high end. It depends what we're talking about. My colleagues here, Lance and John, and Lance in particular, have worked with ODOT quite a bit on ODOT-owned roadways. They tend to build in higher contingencies, so I think their 40% reflects what the expectation is on the ODOT side, but I don't want to speak for them. But so I would say that's on the high end, but it's within the range.
Okay. That's all. Thank you.
And that sounds like a request for a written response. So I think we'll take a question from Mark, and then move on.
Really more of a... Is it on?
Comments, whatever. Yeah, you're on.
Okay, really more of a comment. First, I don't think 40%, if you're dealing with ODOT on a federally funded project, 40% is not high. I would say it's very low. Secondly, this project, in my opinion, is so important that at the last RFFA funding cycle, Milwaukee gave up our premier bike ped project to fund this project, the first stage of this project, because if you look at the west side from a bicycle perspective, it's kind of a no man's land. It's really difficult to ride over there, and it's certainly impossible for families to ride. It's one thing for, you know, the strong and the brave, but it's a completely different story if you're trying to get kids to school or things like that. Our transportation systems are only as good as the system, right? Little short pieces are meaningless. And that's kind of what we're doing with our bike ped infrastructure, unfortunately. I agree with Mr. Gomez that the loss of Oglo is probably the worst thing that's happened in this entire process, quite frankly. We had the opportunity to completely open up two whole halves of the metro region to bike commuting and take a lot of traffic off of 43, and because of a handful of wealthy NIMBYs, for lack of a better term, it's dead for now. We'll see if we can, but I agree that we need to be thinking about, because we are unlikely to have a funding mechanism like this anytime in the future, soon. I think we should really think hard about the fact that a crossing needs to be somewhere in that 11 miles of the Willamette River, and there's potential in West Lynn, there's other potentials. I really think we should think hard before we just don't do anything from that standpoint, because it's a critical piece of infrastructure, as is this. This, I think, is one of the most important pieces that we've looked at for a bike pedestrian system.
Okay, if you have any additional questions specific to this project, remember that you can write them on a post-it, so you can email them to staff. You can hang out later if you are going to be around.
We're staying. Thank
cool.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the time.
Great, thank
and
you.
Now I become Krista.
Okay, so with that, we'll welcome folks to speak on Highway 217.
There's two for us, and there's three for the next one. We're going to divide up. Lillian is...
While she's getting the slide up, I did want to mention that there are, like, the one-pagers for each of these projects that are in your packets, in case you hadn't seen that.
Okay, you ready? All right. Okay, real close. All right, thanks. Okay. So the Washington County Board submitted a request to include Highway 217 as part of the regional funding measure. And I'm Chris Deppenbach, and I'm here to tell you about the proposal. And with me is Jean Seneschal Biggs, who is with the City Transportation Planning Manager with the City of Beaverton, where the project we're talking about would be located. So we're going to to talk about the corridor context overall, and particularly how it's affecting the community, and a little bit more about the project and how it supports the task force values. And just to start, the photo shows, so for those of you that aren't familiar with the West Side, the red line is Highway 217, and it shows what a critical link it is as a north-south facility within Washington County, the only north-south limited access facility in Washington County. And that it connects both to I-5 and 26 for really the key connections to the rest of the region. And then on the right-hand side, you'll see really why we're here, which is the result of the heavy traffic demand and those weaving and merging that results in high crash locations, particularly at the area we're talking about, which is the Canyon Road ramps and the Beaverton Hillsdale Highway ramps. So I think what we want to start out with really is giving you a better understanding of what the corridor is like overall. And to start with the transportation side, we have the one of the green lines is Highway 217. I think an important point for this is that to recognize that the Highway 217 corridor is really part of a multimodal corridor. And we have the west line there in the other green line. At the top is the connections the corridor brings to the blue and red MAX line. We have bus networks through here, and we're really pleased to have frequent service starting on one of those, the Hall Boulevard line, beginning in March, which, again, reflects the growing needs of this corridor. And then just as on the green line on the bottom is the connections that this will provide to the Southwest Corridor. And then we have another one which shows the corridors we're going to talk about today, the dashed yellow line ones are the 99W corridor we're going to talk about. The other dashed lines at the top is the Highway 26 corridor. And with the 217, they're really all sort of a part of a package of important routes within Washington County. And the yellow lines are the corridors you've been talking about a lot, Burnside and TV Highway, as they cross here. But what's really important about this corridor that we want to make sure that comes across is how this corridor is growing. And particularly you can see here in the pale lines the regional centers in down of Beaverton, of Washington Square, and Tigard that are all growing. And I'm going to turn this to Jean, and she can talk a little bit more about the kinds of changes and the increased concentration of jobs and housing in this corridor. And just as an example, there are 70,000 jobs within a half mile of this corridor. So she's going to talk a little more about the rest of other.
Thank you, Allison. So I'm just going to quickly go through these images that are related on the map.
and speak really initially first to Beaverton. Beaverton's emerging really now as a regional center. The City of Beaverton, our community development department, is focused on creating a more vibrant downtown through both projects and programs. So there's a few examples here I'm going to share with you about recent and proposed land use investments in Beaverton and elsewhere along Highway 217 that are examples of the changes that we're seeing that really support the region's growth concept. We're focused on concentrating services in areas that are well served by transit and infrastructure. So looking at these images, image number one shows a vision for a transformed Cedar Hills shopping center with a mix of retail and housing and office that really takes advantage of its proximity to the Sunset Transit Center. Image number two is a rendering for the Marianne. It's a 54-unit affordable housing project that the city is building in Beaverton's old downtown. That's one of the first projects that's to be funded through Metro's affordable housing bond. We're so thrilled to see this project happen, and I hear there is a groundbreaking on April 22nd. Image number three is of the Barcelona. This is a project that opened in 2016. It's a 44-unit affordable housing apartment building right in downtown Beaverton. Image number four, the industrial area, is the West 5 Employment District. It's right adjacent to 217. It's a central district for innovative companies and wholesale distributors. It offers flexible space for companies to move goods from a central hub. Really within that area, the Western Avenue project is a signature action item for us. We're narrowing a road from four lanes to three, building new sidewalks and a cycle track, really because we know employees want access through all sorts of modes. And then finally, those last three images, five, six, and seven, they're just examples from housing and office developments in the southern part of the corridor in Tigard. And again, they'll be supporting the Southwest Corridor project.
Quickly through this. So this is an illustration of the proposed investment, and I know that the task force expressed concerns in the past about adding pavement with any of the funding from here, and this project would add pavement, so I want to point that out right up front. And the project would add ramps in this location between the two intersections of Beaverton Hillsdale Highway and Canyon. And it is a high crash corridor, and the benefits really is it improves safety and reliability and reduces the provides some congestion relief in this corridor. And then just to hit the other parts of this, there are about 30% of the population within zip codes adjacent to this identify as communities of color. This provides access to these populations, the residents in this area, and connects throughout clearly to the rest of the communities as shown on this equity map. I think, Jean, real quickly, since we don't have much time, this is a show of Hall Boulevard, which is one of the adjacent arterials to 217. As you can see, when 217 isn't functioning well, the traffic diverts to this one, and it creates conflicts with the people that are living in this area. And then finally, the investments in this corridor have longstanding community support. You've seen some of that from testimonies and letters here. And ODOT has already taken the initial steps to develop a concept design, and with the funding that we're requesting, they would complete the design and construction of this and be ready to move forward, building on the funding that was allocated through the HB 2017 projects to the south.
So we'll open it up for some questions or comments from the task force. Now, we went kind of quickly through some of those slides, so if you did want to focus in or ask more detail, we'll give you the opportunity to respond. Let's start off with Meredith. Hi, Meredith. Hello.
Hello.
Sorry, is it
late? Is this working now?
No,
no.
I think you're off.
Oh. Hello?
There
okay.
You go.
All right. Back from the wilds of Salem. So thanks for your presentation, and I'm a little confused to see this project partly because I thought Metro had from the beginning said no highway investments would be on the table, so I'm a little confused by the project as a as a proposal, and I wanted to understand kind of why that was being brought to us in general. And then I did have a question, which is whether you've done any modeling and exploration of transit, bus-only lanes, other ways to move people without, as you said, pouring pavement, just to really look at what are the outcomes we're trying to achieve as a task force here are.
And so, thank you. In terms of the highway lanes, this is a popular project in Washington County Investments in 2017. The board submitted these to provide the option for something that could be widely supported for your consideration. In terms of the modeling, yes, we have done modeling of this, and we have looked at additional investments in transit, and we still find that Highway 217 needs still remain. It's part of a multimodal system, and people depend on all modes to get around, whether it's to get to their transit station. But we have done modeling on that in the past.
Okay. So done, sorry, just to clarify, done modeling of if you use the shoulder for a bus-only lane or instead of an auxiliary lane for cars, I'm wondering if you've really, I'd love to see some of that, what it's looked like to give people other options to get around to, the way we've explored that for other corridors in this process.
Yeah, we could. I don't have in recent memory. About 20 years ago, there was quite a study done of 217. I had to look back to see if that looked at bus on shoulder. I don't remember, but we can look into that.
Thank you.
I was just going to answer the first question you asked about the sort of initiation of the entire process and what the council direction and what we brought to the task force at the very beginning was. Sort of put into three categories interest in making investments. And so the first was wanting to rely on the state and federal government to invest in the interstate highway system, and so not looking to a regional measure to provide funds for that. Leaving the door open to partner with the state on the remaining sort of limited access highway system, and then really trying to focus in on the arterial system. So just in terms of where 217 fits in, that's in the limited access highway system, not the interstate system. Otherwise, I don't think we would have brought it into the tiering process and the process of looking at tier one, tier two, tier three, et cetera. So just to clarify that. Initial question.
Mm-hmm. And just as the initial slides showed, we have bus services parallel to the corridor that are continuing to improve service. And the West Line was quite an investment that the county participated in with TriMet and other partners to provide alternative modes in that corridor. So there have been, and then with the Southwest Corridor on one end and the MAX Line at the other end, Beaverton Transit Center in downtown Beaverton is outside of downtown, I think, the busiest transit center in the region. So there is a lot that has been done to provide services for other modes.
I want to build on the highway arterial conversation with a comment and then a question about 217. Joe Courtright wrote somewhat recently that in the region, our arterial roadways comprise 73% of our serious injury crashes. And by that, we're talking about personal serious injury or death. And those roadways, interestingly, are only 12% of the miles. So 73% of serious injuries on our arterials, only 12% of our roadways. So I just think it's important, and we have been doing this, but I think it's important for us to realize where the real issues are relative to safety. They're not really on our highways. They're on our arterials and obviously also other, you know, surface streets. So specifically, and my question is, I don't expect you're going to answer here, but I think it'd be really good for us to understand specifically what the safety issues are and specifically, you know, what's the data around serious injury, personal injury, death in this section, as opposed to fender benders, because I think there can be a conflation between fender benders and personal injury under the rubric of safety.
Yeah, we can provide that information for you in writing. To be clear, this is a high crash location for ODOT, and a lot of its impact is on the reliability and safety, and less so on the serious injuries because people aren't going very fast. But we can get back to you with more information on that.
That'd be great. Thank you.
So just building on the kind of Meredith and Stevens asks for more information, this is my neighborhood, so I kind of live here in this zone, and I have no doubt that the way that you ingress and egress on this section of the freeway is really dangerous. And that's just personal experience, anecdote, so take it for what you will. So that doesn't bother me that much. One of the things, though, as a cyclist that I find in this area is I'd be interested in understanding what you guys are thinking about for north-south travel for cyclists, because my experience in this area is it's terrible. It's very dangerous. There isn't even a back way to cut through necessarily that's really reasonable. Cedar Hills Boulevard's a death trap. I mean, for a cyclist, it's just really bad. And so I'm just wondering what, as you think about these big projects like this, it's the irony of the Fred Meyer billboard there with the cyclists on it kind of caught my attention. I'm really interested. What are we going to do about that? Because some of the corridors underneath the power lines are way further west. And so and there's just a lot of opportunity to help people access so much of the commerce here and housing in this zone. But so what are you guys thinking about?
We can give you some more information about that, I think, just in the time. Okay. Unless you want to hit that now, June.
We have some time.
Okay.
You want to
Dave, so I'll just make a brief comment about cycling in Beaverton. A couple of things to note. He specifically was asking about north-south. And a project that we're advancing in Beaverton is something we call the Loop. Hall Boulevard, which we had the photo up here on the screen, and Watson, there are one-way couplets. And so there's a project that we're focused on from Beaverton Central down through Old Downtown to transform those streets really into much more biking and walking focused streets. There's a huge demand on them, and currently today there's gaps in sidewalks, there's gaps in the bike lanes, so they're really not comfortable places. So that's a project we're advancing. When we write back some answers to, I'll take a look. The city 2 years ago adopted an active transportation plan. We have a lot of need in Beaverton and not nearly enough funding for all of the investments we'd like to make in building out our bicycle and pedestrian network, but we're getting there, and we have a plan for it. So we'll pull some things out from there. Yeah.
Plan for Western Avenue as well to be converted on the other side of 217. And then I think one thing to note is that, as in the current projects for 217 that ODOT's working on, both Beaverton and the county are partnering with ODOT to add some bike lanes and sidewalks as part of that as the opportunities developed. And so that is a pattern that we would continue in this as we get into the design to look for more opportunities for access to the trails through there and the bicycle pedestrians. We have a history of doing that, so we can do that.
So Denny and Mark, I'm looking for additional table tents. Oh, sorry, Emerald. Sorry.
That's all right.
Looks like Denny just deferred to you, and we also have Richa. So I'm going to Emerald and Richa, and then Mark.
Well, I still want to make a comment, though.
Okay,
yeah.
So why don't we do...
You're the boss.
Denny, Emerald,
okay.
Reach out, Mark.
I hope, I want to thank staff for the presentation. I hope that in terms of written responses, we indicate how much traffic these improvements will take off of 217 to allow the throughput to happen. The 2017 work is going to do the same thing. And you might remember when we put the extra lane from 217 to I-5, how congestion went from 40 to 45% to zero. And that's the hope of this this project. This is the only avenue to go north to south for 600,000 people who live in Washington County and 100,000 people who come out of Portland to go south. So this is a huge challenge for all of us, and I just hope we can explain what we're trying to do to alleviate traffic as well as all the other really good questions that you've been asked to answer.
Oh. All good.
Excellent teamwork.
Thanks. Sort of.
We try. just a question. So looking more broadly at the Measure Act, actually the Tier 1 investments as well.
Hi. Thank you.
So looking broadly at the package as it's currently contemplated, in this part of the region, so Washington County, Clackamas County, that sort of west side region, what are the other proposed improvements that are squarely aimed at congestion relief? Is it just 185th? Is it just the grade separation at 185th, or are there other tangible congestion relief projects out there? TV Highway.
Congestion relief, people view that in different spaces. I think I know how you're speaking of it, but I want to be really clear that probably the biggest congestion relief project we have is Southwest Corridor, the ability to move massive amounts of people on light rail. So I just want to be careful that when we say words, we're all using the same language. So there's lots of congestion relief. Anytime you're moving people on a transit, that's congestion relief. But if you're asking what kind of vehicle mobility projects we have, there are C2C. And, well, that's not here, but then 185th. Yeah, okay. To some extent. That's
okay.
It.
I just wanted to clarify.
Misha?
Thank you for your presentation. I was just wondering, you showed us the photo of another nearby arterial street that received some of the traffic overflow. And I'm just curious, as you all came to this table with the project that you wanted funded from this measure, why enhanced transit on these kinds of corridors weren't a priority over this project?
I can just say that Highway 217 is used by over 100,000 people a day, and it has 7 hours of delay per day on average. And it is just has been a priority for addressing for the county for a long time. It doesn't mean, as Jean said, and as you can see, that we've been working on improvements to the other arterials as well.
Mark? Yeah, thanks. So when we set the goals for this whole thing, we talked about congestion relief, equity, safety.
Please speak up.
Sorry.
Speak a little closer to the mic.
When we set the goals for this entire process, we talked about four things: congestion relief, equity, safety, and climate, as the things we were attempting to solve with these investments. This clearly speaks to congestion relief, and pending the answers to Stephen's question, some safety. I'm not seeing really any equity, and frankly, people will say that if you make it easier for people to drive cars, more people will drive cars. So in some ways, it's kind of an anti-climate score. Can you speak to that at all?
Well, it comes back to the fact that we need all modes in this part of the region to support, whether it's driving to get to the transit center, to get to the park and ride. It depends on both, and people value both the transit and the vehicle access. And this is not a capacity access improvement in this sense, as it is trying to get rid of those crashes, so that there is more reliability on the roadway. But I think overall, what we are trying to demonstrate with the photos is that this is a really a community that's really growing all up and down the corridor in a location that's centrally located for access within the region, for access to transit, and having a fully functioning transportation system is important to continue to support that concentrations of growth that we are seeing up and down the corridor. So it's a support for the concentrations of growth, recognizing that you need a fully functioning multimodal system.
I think we'll take a final question or comment from Vivian.
Thank you. I just have a question. Can you clarify the the cost and then the funding sources and what sources of funding you'd be leveraging for this project? Thank you.
So the ODOT's estimated cost is between $130 to $150 million for design and construction. They are currently funding an initial concept planning phase. And in terms of leverage, this project really builds on. It continues the projects that HB 2017 funded are to the south of this location. So this sort of makes the sort of completes or it sort of adds to those improvements as well. And again, as I've said, the county, Beaverton, other partners have a history of working with ODOT to identify opportunities as designs move forward for additional improvements.
All right. I think with that, we will move on. Chris, are you going to stay with us?
I'm going to stay with you. I am.
Great. And we're going to look at 99W next. Yes.
Oh, look. Good.
This is where we get cozy.
Yeah. Okay.
Space on
the side.
Okay, I have.
You guys are ladies. People really
want to
sit next to me.
I cut out some papers.
Okay, so we're going to shift. A little bit to the east, as shown on this map, with the 99W corridor, and the Washington County Board also submitted a request to include a corridor planning study for this corridor, and I'm here to. Cover that as well. And with me is Garrett Pryor from the City of Tualatin and Dave Roth from the City of Tigard, and they're going to talk specifically about how the needs in the communities along the corridor. So the one thing I want to start off with by saying is that this is really a partnership of the cities with the county, and ODOT's been working with us, and TriMet's been working with us as well, of all the cities along the corridor, which includes Tigard, Tualatin, Sherwood, King City, and Durham. And it's clear, as we've seen the growth in this corridor, and like other state highways where the communities have grown up and around the highway, the needs of the highway are changing. And this is an opportunity to complete a corridor study. There have been a lot of studies done in the past. This is the need for a complete corridor study that can tie together the communities and the needs of this changing facility and get out ahead and then make sure that investments are identified that can really cohesively address the problem. So with that introduction, I'm going to turn it over to, I think I'm going to turn it over to Dave first.
Thanks, Chris. So nice to see everyone tonight. I'm Dave Roth. I'm Tigard's transportation planner, and I'm happy to be here with our partners on this ask to the task force. So Highway 99W, or Pacific Highway, as it's also known, from Tigard to Portland is a 10-mile corridor that serves local transportation needs, access to employment, housing, services, shopping, and recreation, and directly links the cities of Sherwood, Tualatin, King City, and Tigard. It also serves as a critical regional transportation need by connecting the Portland metro area to the greater Willamette Valley and points beyond. But not only is it congested 7 days a week, it is ill-equipped and in some cases downright hostile to multimodal needs. We see this through the shared experience of local jurisdictions abutting or bifurcated by 99W. In Sherwood, the highway is a barrier to access for a new high school under construction today. In King City, senior citizens with limited mobility cannot easily access transit stops because of limited crossing opportunities. And in Tigard, pedestrians are forced to walk along the highway or through parking lots on a patchwork of sidewalks, and cyclists fend for themselves when the bike lane randomly disappears in the middle of the road. Thank you. So 99W is a metro-identified high-injury corridor. So between 2013 and 2017, there were 9 fatalities, 20 bike crashes, and 20 pedestrian crashes. And you can see in the map there the concentration increases the closer you get to Portland and I-5. A key objective of our proposal is to identify and build off existing investments to create a safe, accessible travel options that will work for people regardless of age, ability, or method of travel. it's worthwhile mentioning 99W in the context of the proposed Southwest Corridor light rail alignment. We know there will be more trips by active transportation modes, transit and car, and more crossing demand in the vicinity of Southwest Corridor stations. This proposed project will build on Southwest Corridor investments to support access to and ridership on the light rail system. And I'm going to turn it over to Garrett.
Thank you. So in addition to the map we just saw from Dave of people who are literally dying trying to cross this road to go buy groceries or go to school, the map you see here on the screen, I think, plays the picture and the story of exactly what we're trying to address. The shaded areas are higher concentrations of people of color or low income. But what this also includes is outside of the metro region. And so when you saw the corridor maps at the very beginning of the night, it stopped at the edge of the region and didn't capture what's just to the west of our corridor in our cities, the people who have been economically dislocated from the Portland region to search for housing. Those folks are coming to work every day in our communities and moving through there. At the other end of that red arrow is the Southwest Corridor Project. And if you look for who's getting on that train and coming to those jobs when Metro ran the numbers, it connects to the equity areas in North and Northeast Portland. So this is truly the spine of a regional system serving and trying to meet the needs of people in color and low-income communities. And we know transportation alone cannot solve this. We are, in addition to the $975 million, this would help leverage and achieve the goals of the Southwest Corridor Project. Each one of our communities is doing what we can to improve the livability and walkability in that area. King City is about to double with the urban growth boundary expansion and has a concentrated mixed-use area. Tigard has already received and is building affordable housing through the Metro Bond. And under the leadership of Mayor Bubinick, who spoke at public comment, the city of Tualatin, for the first time in 30 years, has strategies for affordable housing in the community. And so each one of us are trying to build on this. We're working together. But what really in addition to that, let me mention the West Side Trail connects through this 99W corridor, and the Tualatin National Wildlife Refuge is also located on it. But what we really need this plan for, what we keep kind of losing out when we go to the state or go to the region for money, is the lack of a comprehensive plan. And we can continue to do small improvements to sidewalks and other kinds of pieces along the way, which are, us as the cities, we have been chipping in. But we need this planning money to go and leverage the larger amount of dollars that you see Westland was in here today, and the other localities have done too that. So community support, ready to move. And I think Chris has a final comment.
I think that was time, actually. So we can wrap it up.
Concluding that I think Gary said well, and Dave, that this is a really important corridor. It's a really important corridor to the county, and based on the experience we've seen with these other facilities around the region, it really is a good time now, especially we have the partnerships ready to, and the stakeholders that ODOT has already funded a scoping effort. Sure. Where there's been a lot of outreach to stakeholders already. It's really a good time to get going on this.
Questions? All right,
Michael, saw that. Yeah, I don't have a question as much as just part of the last 18 meetings is sort of taking in a lot of information that is very foreign to me. I mean, you guys live in a very different world and different drivers. But I've got a couple of consistent filters, and I want to go back to Mark's comments that what makes this work is if what you want is what we want. And there are a couple of things that I listen to very deeply. One is impact on marginalized communities. And the other is environmental impacts, emission controls. I mean, what are we trying to do to sort of recalibrate the impacts of some of these major decisions in construction? And I have to say that the two presentations have just, I'm not compelled. As I listen, I'm trying to listen very deeply, but I'm not compelled, and I'm trying to disavow myself of that because I don't want to think that, you know, a very superficial reference to impact on marginalized communities should be. I mean, I have to listen to it. I'm trying to get the grist of it, and I'm not coming away with anything. So, and there's a part of it that feels like appropriation to me. So, I mean, I have to kind of just ask that you really think about this, because there are good reasons, and then there are your reasons, and they may not be the same.
So I just kind of want to take the temperature of the group. I saw some nodding heads, and I think I heard even a little a comment from somebody. Are folks sharing the same sentiment? Or kind of seeing some of that in the task force? I see. Thank you. In the audience as well. Okay. Just to kind of get a sense of the temperature. There's some shaking heads, so people who have different perspectives. Okay. Do you want to respond to that?
From the community perspective, you've not talking to folks.
I mean, I would say that to a certain extent there's a lot of truth in it, especially with the 99W corridor, because we're still working on what are those specific measures from communities that are most impacted and that have been marginalized in the past that can be put into this process. And so I think that's definitely a strong element and what we're doing. We're kind of asking for money, though, to get to conduct that output, to conduct that process. Because we've been doing it now individually as communities, but what that ends up is a little fix here, a little fix there. What we need to do is at least build on those same conversations and relationships to come up with some more sizable impacts, as far as investment.
Yeah, I just want to speak to that because I hear it, but I also want to add from some direct experience over the past couple of decades working with an organization that built 5 properties along that corridor that were within close proximity of Barber.
Sheila, can we get the mic just a little closer?
Seeing,
I know it's a challenge.
Seeing people without cars crossing Pacific Highway to walk to work and to get to transit regularly. And I just did a quick count, which is not accurate, but reflects some of what you heard from Tiger and Tualatin about projects that are under construction right now, 3 big projects in the Tiger Triangle. Well, 1 really big and 2 a little bit smaller than that. In Tualatin, a proposed project, which would be 100-plus units. I used to have offices near King City on Pacific Highway, and literally it's embarrassing to say that staff would get in their car to drive across those, what is it 4 or 6 lanes at that point to go to the Walgreens? And I mean, it's horrible to live in an environment like that. It is horrible to use your car as a human shield. I don't think anybody wants to do that. For the people who don't have the luxury of a car, they're doing it without that shield. So I just think there are a lot of affordable units already, and there are a lot more going in. So there's a lot of equity to build into that corridor.
Yeah, well, first off, I just want to say, Michael, thank you. I really mean that. I think that's one of the things I really love about this group and the perspectives on here is there are things that, comments that are made that kind of make me pause and think, okay, I need to look at something through a little bit of a different lens. So whenever I hear someone of color say something about this feels a little bit like appropriation, I think we need to pause and go, okay, what is it about this? And is it genuine and are we being real with it? So I think that's something we need to pause and look at. The other comment I would make, though, is on 2 of these 4 proposals, they are, as you both said, for planning, and so those are very different from ones that are also proposing construction and moving forward, right? To me, the planning is to figure some of that stuff out, and I think, okay, maybe very strong on the safety, which I know that area very well. I can tell from a safety standpoint it should be high on the list, but from a couple of these other lenses that are real important, we need to kind of do a little more homework on that. But I do think that's a different thing when you're talking about planning dollars, because to your point, I think that's what we do need to figure out as a couple of those things. So I remain open to it, but I appreciate the comment very much.
Thank you. Like my colleague Dave earlier mentioned, I've both lived off of 82nd Avenue, where right now I'm wearing the Apano hat, but I also have lived off of 99W as well, and see the map that you showed for the equity map. I think, I don't know when those data points were used, maybe 2010 census, I would imagine, but the demographics are changing, and I can anecdotally say, having lived off both corridors, the behavior change is really similar. The pedestrian deaths and everything, I think the demographics are changing. Low socioeconomic status folks are being truly dislocated out to that region. And so in this case, I think we should give the messenger a little bit more credit. I can personally vouch for the fact that it's not just appropriation, but truly it is a concern of equity for the marginalized groups that are having to rely on that corridor to get to work or to affordable housing.
Yeah, I just think, I don't know, Michael's comment just made me want to surface, I think, something that might not be specific to this corridor, but to all the corridors that are being presented today, that when we're asking folks to kind of talk about the safety or the equity component of their project, that there might be a sense of, like, it's hard for that to be transparent. And so I think just for everyone that's presenting today, not taking lightly like what we mean by equity and what we mean by safety. We mean death. So it just I think that was kind of some of the that's what I heard from Michael's comments, some of it.
Yeah, I was also very struck by Michael's comment. I noticed that both when we speak about people of color, when we speak about low income, and when we use the term multimodal, it often gets thrown around as we're doing multimodal, like all modes count. Cars are a mode, right? But typically when we're talking about multimodal, the point is other than cars. We all know we got the cars. The cars are ubiquitous. When we're talking about making a shift in our transportation system, improving our transportation system, we're actually talking about dramatically increasing the safety and possibility of using other modes than cars. So I think something that I was looking for in this presentation particularly was a little more sense of vision around what you intend to cause with the planning process. And I didn't get it. I didn't hear it.
I can speak to the ask and the proposal from Tigard's perspective. And absolutely. I think the vision that we're trying to develop here is going to be something that we developed through this process and with a very thorough engagement process with the communities that are affected and impacted by 99. And I think I can speak from my experience working with the partners so far in terms of Tualatin, Sherwood, King City, Washington County, the few folks at ODOT who we've been talking to on this. And I think there's a pretty broad recognition that the vision definitely has to go beyond just the congested auto corridor. And I can't speak for everyone here, but at least for myself, the vision has to be, to your point about multimodalism, it does have to go beyond cars. We know that we can't solve the problems out there, whether it's safety issues or community building or whatever the problems we have out there are. It has to include solutions that are transit, active transportation, and we take that stuff pretty seriously at the City of Tigard.
And I'll just add quickly, and we can come back with a little more specificity on what are some of those elements to it. I know from Tualatin, I was just out there talking to a woman who works at the front desk in an auto parts store, and she was saying she would like to take the bus, but it took her 2 hours to get there from Southeast Portland. And so I know from the City of Tualatin, transit, bus rapid transit, other types of, how do we get folks to there in an effective way? This is definitely something we want to see included, studied, and see where that stacks up in this process.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, with that, I think we will move on. Okay, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
And we're moving on. We're staying in Washington County, but we're heading to look at Sunset
Solve. And we're not talking. So the city of Hillsborough is the proposing jurisdiction for this next project. So I appreciate the courtesy of being able to introduce our staff, who will be presenting a project. It's $1.3 million for funding the Sunset Highway Corridor Study. And there's a thorough community-driven study that will help us understand transportation challenges in the corridor and identify multimodal, besides cars, improvements that will help us get around. And so we have Brad Choi, who's our transportation planner. He's also on the board for Westside Transportation Alliance. And we have Greg Snyder, who's a senior planner, who will be able to answer more technical questions if they arise. So with that, Brad, thank you, and I'll turn it over to you two.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. As the Mayor said, I'm Brad Choi. This is Greg Snyder, and Greg's here to help with the question and answers today. We're here to request the $1.3 million be included in the final funding measure for the Sunset Highway Corridor Study. With this request, we're committed to a collaborative and comprehensive process in partnership with the region to really advance the goals and values that this task force has set out. So the Sunset Highway Corridor Study itself is already included in Chapter 8 of the Metro Regional Transportation Plan, the currently adopted one. The study area is shown behind me on this slide. This is the only slide we have, by the way. Very simple. Bounded by the red area and the Sunset Highway. The highway itself is the yellow line, but the study area is the entire red area. So the corridor today carries about 400,000 person trips per weekday across connecting northern Tualatin Valley to the Willamette Valley. So the goal of this study is to identify, the goal of this corridor study really is to identify the partnerships and solutions to reduce congestions and crashes, increase reliability along the corridor, and increase transit options for users, which in turn hopefully will reduce the carbon footprint along the corridor. So this is a planning level study that we're asking the funding for $1.3 million. The task force has set out a number of key outcomes to achieve through this investment measure, and this study has strong connections to a number of them, but given the time constraints, I'm just going to touch on a few tonight. Number one is supporting communities of color. I think we just touched on that in the previous presentation. And you've heard this before. Immigrants and communities of color are disproportionately impacted by the deficient transportation system, resulting in longer commutes, unsafe streets, and unreliable transit options, usually due to where they live. So the Sunset Highway Corridor itself serves one of the most diverse communities in the region. So today, both the Hillsborough and Beaverton school districts have majority-minority student populations. So these are our workforce and workers of tomorrow. So this is the corridor that serves these people and get them to their jobs from where they live. And as a twice immigrant myself, okay, I can attest to this is the number one driver for immigrant communities is access to economic opportunities, number one. That's what immigrants' communities come here for. So this nicely brings me to the second key outcome that we like to touch on, which is supporting economic opportunities. The Sunset Highway Corridor is the key route, as I just mentioned, that connects workers to family wage jobs. It also carries products from the major manufacturers to and agricultural businesses in the rural area to their world markets. It helps small businesses in this area and local farmers in this area bring their product to their local customers and grow their businesses. So an improved network here across this corridor, a multimodal transportation network, will really support the economic growth and ultimately the opportunities for these communities who aspire for better economic status. That's what this economic opportunities is about. And the third key outcome I'm going to touch on is how this study will look to improve safety along the corridor. This is a high crash corridor. There are a number of locations that are in ODOT's top 10% high crash locations list. And due to congestions on 26, the highway itself, so a lot of traffic are often diverted off of the highway onto the parallel routes in this area, which are all very challenging, but where people live, right? So there's a huge negative effect on people who actually live, work, and play in this area when you have this conflict between vehicles that got bumped off the highway and now navigating these roads that are not meant to carry that kind of load or the traffic. So the study will look to reduce that conflict, look for alternatives, and also look to solve these, look at these crash hotspots and also look at safety issues for heavy freight that are using alternative routes like Cornelius Pass Road, which are not safe for freight traffic at all. And the final point I'm going to touch on real quick is how the study will support clean air, clean water, and healthy ecosystem. We will look to study and assess the environmental impact along this corridor and seek to identify these multimodal solutions that will help reduce the greenhouse gas footprint. So I'll just leave it at that for this study. In closing, we ask for your partnership and your collaboration to support these key outcomes, to help improve the mobility, safety, environment, and really the economic opportunities for the communities and these diverse workforce along the corridor. So we think this is really a corridor of regional and statewide significance and should be included in the funding measure. So thank you.
We'll take some questions from the group or comments.
I actually have a question.
Yes.
So I was reading the history, and it looks like that there is a state, I guess I'm curious about like the $1.3 million ask for this. How much is the state putting in for the planning, and is there a different like geographic area that they're looking at, or is this just a supplement what the state's doing?
Yeah, we're just looking for the funding here to supplement what the state of Oregon, with the governor's blessing, and then the Washington County and Hillsborough, we've committed together approximately $1.2 million. So this is an ask of $1.3, which we think together is the right amount to do a robust enough study to actually understand the needs, the deficiencies, and then look for the right solutions.
Okay. And so the state's committing about $1
million?
Yes, roughly.
Okay.
All right, how about Stephen and then Meredith?
I guess I have a question about geography. I'm not exactly sure what I want to ask because I'm not a planner. You know, when I first saw this coming up as a potential, you know, Tier 2 project, and I totally understand it's planning money, but, you know, I was thinking Highway 26. And, you know, just this map alone suggests something quite different in terms of at least study. And so maybe a couple questions. One is, obviously, quite a bit of this is in Multnomah County. And clearly the traffic flow in and out is between Multnomah County and Washington County, and obviously some of it's in and out. So I'm just wondering if there's, would the study have collaboration with Multnomah County? So that's kind of like one question. Maybe it's just the way the lines are drawn. I see Forest Park is in there. I mean, I'm just interested in the vastness of it and what that means in terms of the study relative to the kind of corridor and in transportation.
Yeah, I'll start. Maybe Greg could chime in. But Sunset, the corridor itself carries a lot of traffic that goes through the entire corridor, so it's not as localized. So I think we're really looking to bring on the partners as this study gets going. I don't know who all those partners are, but it's certainly more than Hillsborough, Washington County. There are other communities along this corridor. Some are not even incorporated. So there's just a lot of partners we'll be looking to reach out to in this study. So yeah, it's yet to be defined, but I think it's a large community and coalition.
Sure, and to describe the geography, it is a big area, there's no doubt about it. But US 26 is unique because we have this geographic barrier called the West Hills. And there's only so many times or points that people can get through there. For example, the tunnels, which US 26 connects to, I-405, they were done in 1971. The population of the Portland metropolitan region there was under 1 million at that time. There's a number of roadways, arterial roadways, that cut through the rural reserve in that area. I can name them: Cornelius Pass Road, Germantown, Barnes Burnside, Cornell. If you look at any one of those roadways, it's clogged with thousands of diverted car trips and vehicle trips, bicyclists, and other sorts of modes that just simply can't get through the West Hills. And that is a major problem, and that's why what happens on US 26 affects every single roadway that goes over the West Hills, including Canyon Road.
Okay,
this? Hello. All right. Well, now I have two questions because that just I'm trying to make sense of what I just heard was we can't get through the West Hills, and that's why we're including Forest Park. I am very flummoxed by this study. If it's truly about the corridor, it's clear there are real traffic issues and safety issues and things you're trying to solve for along US 26. What I see in here is talking about the port, talking about 405, talking about connecting freight corridors, and I see pristine Forest Park there. Are we... Can you allay any concerns I have that we're talking about a road somehow going through Forest Park?
I think that's what this... We're asking for funds to do a planning-level study. There's no solutions that or concepts that have been contemplated. There's no preconceived ideas of what the study is meant to do. Some of the things that... We know Cornelius Pass Road, safety hazard, but truck traffic is already using it. There are 11,000 trucks today. The corridor moves 400,000 people trips per day, and a number of transit. There are a lot of transit, multimodal transit solutions that could really help relieve that. So whether it's express bus, kind of bus on shoulder, those kinds of solutions are the concrete ones that I think that have been talked about that I think we will pursue.
So that helps answer my second question before I asked it, which was, like I've asked for the other, how much you've studied, and this will look at bus on shoulder and some of that. So I'm very happy to hear that you're looking at those other solutions. I didn't hear a no, we're not talking about planning a road through Forest Park, and I'd really like to just...
Well, I can address that. So in the Metropolitan Regional Transportation Plan, there is a list of in Chapter 8 of potential ideas about how to solve mobility in this corridor. And they range from a very simple operational fix, like how many cars can go through the queue bypass on each of the on-ramps and how those are metered, all the way up to new transit systems, or potentially, as Brad said, express bus or other sorts of mobility choices. The reason that we are including the larger area is because Cornelius Pass Road, Germantown, Barnes-Burnside, Cornell are all an interconnected system. So whatever happens on US 26 directly affects all of those other arterial roadways directly. I'll give you an example. So Cornelius Pass Road was shut down this summer. I don't know if any of you was diverted through that detour. It was shut down for almost 2 months. We did a pretty comprehensive before and after study of what happened to that traffic, and it all went back to US 26. So there is a symbiotic relationship between all of those roadways and what happens on US 26. That's why you can't study just the highway corridor in isolation. You have to look at a comprehensive look of the mobility needs about how people are traveling. Because right now, for example, there are 15,000 cars a day on Cornelius Pass Road, with a vast majority of that, well, not vast majority, being automobile traffic, but it's urban-to-urban traffic traveling on a rural road that was designed way back in the day. So it's just not an appropriate place to have urban-to-urban traffic on a rural arterial roadway.
I feel like we need to... I just head this up because nobody's really talking about this. So in Chapter 8 of the 2018 RTP, Hillsborough developed a mobility corridor plan that was referenced. As part of that plan, there was an option to look at a roadway that goes through Forest Park. I'm just going to say that was discussed as an option. That was in the 2000 RTP. We spent a lot of time with Chris, Washington County. We spent a lot of time with Don Ottermott to look at other options, but I just want to... I don't think you're getting your question answered, and I feel like you need it answered.
Thank you.
So sorry. But from Metro staff point of view, there was imagined in exploring an option of a roadway that cut through Forest Park and down to Highway 30 at one point. So if you have feedback on that, then speak to that, please.
My feedback is I really hope this planning dollars don't go to putting a road through Forest Park. And I would love to hear more about the other ways you're studying transit and bus on shoulder and some of those other things you're looking at to reduce greenhouse gases. Thank you.
Take a question or comment, please, Dave.
Meredith got half my question. I would also say I'm not supportive of a new road through Forest Park. So just saying. I'm glad you asked that question. But I understand the need to, as you study a corridor, when you squeeze the balloon in one place, how does it pop out in other places? I get that need to understand that. But the one thing I'd also like to hear more about, if you can answer now or maybe reply in writing, is just what are your bicycle planning thoughts in this corridor? Part of this corridor has a really great bike option, but the other parts really don't. And so what I'm wondering if you're thinking about that as part of your study as well. That would be something I'd be interested in.
Again, I think that's what we are hoping the study will tell us. That's why we're different from the previous proposal, is that this is just not like the beginning. We're asking for funding to do the study, so we really don't have any of these answers right now that what we want to look at, what the potential solution. So we have not gone through any of those, so it's just too early to say what we and we're the jurisdiction in one corner of this. We're not even really champion. We're here to we're doing the leading the presentation, but we don't know the answers to those yet.
Okay, just as a quick follow up, I would expect and hope that would be part of the study. So if you guys haven't scoped that, I'd say add it as line G on whatever part of your study you need to have. But I think that's important for this group, and certainly people in the region are going to want to understand
that.
So I appreciate that you guys would study it. So
yeah, that's one thing we know is we're looking for multimodal solutions to this corridor because of the challenges.
All right, so with that, I think we will wrap up our presentation and discussion of Tier 2 corridors. Thank you to all the folks who presented this evening, and thank you, task force members, for your thoughtful comments. Chairs, back over to you.
Okay. Thank you to all of the jurisdictions for coming down and giving some insight into these Tier 2 corridor recommendations, and thanks to everybody here for all your great questions and thoughtful, respectful, interesting questions, and for just kind of continuing on as being a part of this process as we work through all of the big decisions that we have to make. If you have written questions that you want us to continue to get answered, please write them down. You can stick them on those post-its over there. You can hand them to staff. And we will make sure that we get those questions answered before our next task force meeting. Before our March 18th meeting. And March 18th is when we're going to be providing input to Metro about these Tier 2 corridor decisions. So, but before the March 18th meeting, we have the March 4th meeting, and Pam is going to tell us about that.
So our next meeting is March 4th. That's 2 weeks from tonight, and we're going to take a break from the Tier 2 discussion, and we will be discussing the region-wide programs. I think the last time we had that discussion was several months ago. So we'll be revisiting the region-wide programs, and we're going to be help shape the staff recommendation that will help programs do a good job to advance our values that we've identified here, alongside other extensive engagement that they're doing around the program. So it's going to be a very interesting discussion. And would you remind me how many programs? Is 10? That's what I thought. It's quite a few. So that we'll be absorbing a lot of information on that night. Now, what's important is that we are going to be moving the location, and that meeting is not going to be here. It is going to be out in Park Rose. Yes, yes.
Park Rose.
Both Dave and I are... and we had one other Park Rose Bronco here. Yep. I'll write Bob. So, it's going to be at the Sacramento Elementary School in East Portland's Park Rose School District. And the address will be posted online, and staff will be sending us more information about that. But we want to know what programs you're most interested in discussing. So please watch for an email from Craig that's going to have a link with a two-minute survey. You sure it's 2 minutes?
Maybe one.
Okay, a quick survey anyway. And the staff will use our responses to organize the group discussion on March 4th because of the number of programs that we'll be looking at. So with that, we could be 6 minutes early here.
I'm 8 minutes early.
You have 8 minutes? Wow.
Yeah, Pam, way back when, we had a number of community presentations or opportunities to talk about programs that people gave feedback on. We've had opportunities in this group to do some post-it note kinds of things. Has that all been assembled into creating these?
Here they come.
These 10, or are we starting? I just want to make sure that we're not starting over again
to something
that we've already rehashed.
But that's a very good question. Thank you.
It was, as Craig says, it was warm back when we had this conversation. It was September, I believe, and you went through an exercise of narrowing after we had done community survey and other things in the springtime. We got down to 9 programs plus an overlay of anti-displacement, and I think we're calling it community stability program. So we're calling that the 10th program that we brought forward to the Metro Council in the fall, and they said proceed with these 10 sets of programs. There was, you know, a variety of ranking exercises that we had you do, and we brought all that information to the council. We have been working since then at the staff level to try to make some sense of what would the administrative process, what would the process of sort of overseeing programs and putting money out kind of look like, and we're entering into community engagement work later this month and into March, and we want to bring all that information to you at the next meeting to also get your feedback along the way as we prepare to go to the Metro Council with to try to flesh out scope, scale, size, talk about criteria for decision making with these 10 different program areas.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank
Great.
You.
Stephen?
Yeah, just quick. So back on Tier 2, I want to so clarity on the March 18th. Are we actually voting on these 4 like we did previously on Tier 1? Or what are we doing?
I believe we're asking for your feedback so we can take that to the Metro Council. Because we haven't gone through the same level of staff analysis and local investment team and all that work on it, we're looking for your advice and feedback that we can bring to Metro Council and ask them to make decisions. It will be for the Metro Council at about the same time that we're doing this thing we're calling the reconciliation, where we're having a sense of how much revenue do we think we're realistically going to have, and what's the scale of the set of projects and programs that you have brought forward and the Metro Council has brought forward. So it hopefully meshes well to say, do we have the resources to consider adding some or all of these or some aspect of them at that moment in time. That's the theory,
just,
at least.
Just an observation, not to pick on 217, but I will. I mean, the other three are, well, 43 is different too, but I mean, those two, but particularly 217, it's $140-50 million. And I mean, that's serious money, right? So, I mean, it would be one of the top 5 projects in the entire package. So I don't know how we want to get to a sense of support or lack thereof around the table, but it just needs some consideration. And the voting process in our first corridor selection was a little wonky, and it was greatly improved, the next time. So I just hope we don't get to that very important decision point, and we don't have a real clear way to express support or lack thereof.
Do you want a de-wonkified process of getting advice and then recommendations?
That's up to you.
Yeah, and I think it's important to have your temperature read. I also think, this is not on. I also think we're open to suggestions to say in that circumstance whether you support planning money or just design money or construction money. That was also kind of on the table at Tier 1. So we want those kind of comments as well in terms of what kind of level of funding would you support. And we can ask the partners to go back and give us those numbers as well.
Your desire for a clear process is noted. We'll work hard on that. Thank you.
Dave?
Thanks, Chair. I just along those lines, I know in some of the projects we had them broken out in phases, and so if that
is helpful on a project like 217 where it's, a, I mean, well, I don't know if it's helpful. I think it would be helpful if it's possible on a project like the 217 project. If it's not, it's not. But I think in the, some of those cases, it was helpful to understand the phases and as we seek to try to make some recommendations. So.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, everybody. We will see you in a couple of weeks.
Apparently, I have a black and white. Thank you. Whenever I hear about this project, the road through the forest is like this. So we're glad Don put a chunk on that before we
move on. Is it, you know, the whole time, or is it the expansion?
I mean, it's a new, because it's a new overpass. That's like grand. Because I don't think you can go to that. It's not solid, but it's over on the other side of the forest. Yeah. You take the same time to it. So I don't think it's a road that, like, I don't. There might be one where I can turn down right or just a little, like, when I hear John, he's got this sort of great thing, like, it didn't seem like it was, didn't rise to the level of our keeping policy, but I guess it's one of those things that, like, noted in the footnote, and so suddenly, like, pull it back out and say, oh, this is viable, we are continuing.
I used to commute that way. So I used to live in North Carolina, and it's not bridge.
St. John's Bridge.
If you try to come back that way in the evenings,
I'm loving the pain stories, and this amazing work to keep you connected.
Next week. Okay. Yeah, I have to check some insurance things, and it's not going to be ready until next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm doing this changeover up here. I said I'm doing the changeover up here. But the question I had was, do I leave these tables here? Are they going to need something for breakfast here? Yeah, I wasn't intending to call you. Okay, bye.
Can you find my purse in here? Hi, okay. Do you guys want to see my purse in here by chance? Oh, there it is. Look at my two hardworking counselors. You guys are here at the very end of all this stuff.
Well, we are doing this before and after the meeting.
Particularly when we do this.
So you won't clean that floor for us?
Yeah.
What's that?
You won't get them first? They got a lot of fingerprints.
How much mean you?
You won't clean them first?
I'm going to clean the ones that are going to stay.
No, but see?
They're still staying here.
If they use them again, I like that one.
Yeah.
It will look bad.
We got to get them out. And then.
Why do we complain about this?
Listen to Roberta Worldwide.
Yeah, because that one looks bad.
So we can get them out of here and then clean them.
Okay.
But, so this is coming. And this comes. Thank you.
Thank you.
organic.
Yeah.
There is a lot of that in here.
Yeah, okay, I'll leave that one, come back.
See in here?
Uh-huh.
Alejandro. Yes, how are you doing? Alejandro. Yeah.